Welcome back, Survivor fans, to episode 12 of season 23 of Survivor South Pacific. I am your host, Ralph, with my fellow host, Chris. Say hello.
I've been upgraded to fellow host.
Yeah, I've been trying to think of a less awkward way of to, you know, sort of getting through that. So I think host, fellow host.
That works.
We're both fellows.
I think it could work. I feel like I somehow got a promotion. I don't know. Sounds good. I'll take it.
We are two episodes. We have one more this week, and then like Sunday, and that's it, right?
No way, really?
I feel like it has to be.
Well, I guess you could be right. Yeah, because Friday. Let's see, we've got
there's five left.
Five on the island plus two at Redemption. So we could have an elimination. We could have a regular episode this Wednesday. And then,
Christmas.
And then we would be down to because then we would be down to four on the island and two at Redemption,
right?
And so then so next Sunday,
Christmas.
Yeah, no, not Christmas. It would be Sunday the 18th.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I think it'll be good. Sunday the 18th.
Good.
Will probably be the finale. They'll do the final Redemption Island challenge. The winner will come back in. We'll have five left, and then we'll run through.
We'll go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're all assuming that Ozzy has to win out to get there.
I don't know. I mean, I think this episode sort of it appears. I don't know. I mean, Coach gave his
word. Yeah.
He gave his Christian man word, which apparently is stronger than Oak. To make a Jerry Maguire reference. And
My mind totally went there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes, my word is my bond. I'm still moved by that speech.
You were down with that colored fella down by the escalator.
Right. Just so nobody thinks you're a racist, Ralph was quoting that line, quoting another line from the movie.
What was it? Kush?
Kush. Yeah, it is Kush.
It is Kush.
Yep. Jerry O'Connell in a riveting performance.
Did you see? Oh wow, we're really going off. Did you see Jay Farrow's Cuba Gooding Jr. on Saturday Night Live? It was amazing.
I didn't know. Jay Farrow he's got a nice little repertoire
of
other black celebrities. Yeah, he's got an impeccable Denzel, and I've seen his Will Smith. His Will Smith needs some work.
Not a heh.
Yeah, I may just be defensive because I've been, I was early to the Will Smith bandwagon. I bought Code Red, so you know.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
That was one of the DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince albums.
Wow,
that was when Fresh Prince tried to go just like slightly thug. Like, not full-on thug, because he knew he didn't want to, like, go down that road and have to swear in every single one of his records, that's his big thing, is he won a Grammy, he didn't even have to swear on a record.
Not having to cuss, right, yeah.
But yeah, that was the, like, Boom Shake the Room, you remember that one? That Boom Shake the Room was on that one, the album was Code Red, and the title cut is actually pretty good. From that album, I gotta say.
Well, we'll review obscure albums of the 80s on a different podcast.
All right, that'll be part of the winter hiatus.
So, my apologies for the delay in the podcast. We had some conflicts on Wednesday night that prevented us from broadcasting, and this is our first window to do it. So,
Ralph got some bad Thai food.
I don't want to get into it. Let's dive into it. We have you know, this standard stuff at Redemption that we saw in the previews, but the first thing that caught me was going back to camp. It's just the six remaining Upoluvians.
Upoluvians.
And
yeah.
Camp is looking dire. There's like a smoldering fire. Rick is roasting a sock. Everyone's covered head to toe in bug bites, and it's just looking like this is truly day 31 or whatever it is on the island. You can tell.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't look good. And, I mean, the tribe is a little bit de-unified, disunified, ununified. I don't know what the antecedent should be there or whatever. But they don't look – they're not together. The togetherness is not there.
Edna points out pointedly by refusing to participate in team prayer. When Brandon calls for it.
No, yeah, I noticed. You know, I don't know what to think of it all. Her struggle is weird for me because part of me wants to say, like, you know, you're getting all bent out of shape, and you know, you knew the game you signed up for. But the other part of me feels like she has a legitimate beef with them because of the fact that, like, you know, she didn't sign up for the game with some honor, integrity, loyalty mantra. She just signed up for the game. And all the people she played with decided there was going to be an honor, integrity, loyalty mantra. And it's kind of a bunch of BS. And she's calling them. Yeah, she's
it's
calling them on their BS. And I struggle back and forth. I think, you know, it's interesting. It seems like, you know, there's this weird new movement of, like, panel discussions, it appears, in Survivor, where, like, people don't try to make moves by working a person at a time. They instead, like, convene, like, a panel of people that they think they can sway and try to get them all on board at once. And I guess maybe there's some legitimacy to this. You know, that she makes her pitch at some point to Coach Sophie and Albert, and, you know, it feels weird to me because then it turns into this, like, I feel like she's sitting in an interview or she's, like, you know, giving a presentation at a conference or something.
I think it's easier for a group to kind of hold strong and not feel swayed when they're together.
Like, yeah.
When someone puts you to a point and it's just one-on-one and you feel like, you know, they're not going to leave you alone until you give them your word.
You can plant the seeds.
People will make promises in those cases where they wouldn't necessarily as a group. You know, as a group,
yeah,
you can say, like, well, we'll talk about it. You know, we'll look at the options and stuff like that. And,
well, on the flip side, I think there's some legitimacy to it because, you know, so many of these moves require, you know, no one's going to do it on their own. So you need to have a few people go at once. And so maybe there's some legitimacy to it because you need to get... You need to get three people to jump at once because otherwise they're all just going to say, well, I'm not jumping unless he's jumping, and then nobody's the first jumper.
But I like the paranoia of the get everyone one-on-one, and, like, you needle everyone's individual little weaknesses when you got them by, you know, alone.
That's true.
You know, and you're sitting on a log, you know, 100 feet from the rest of the camp, you know, you're talking in hushed tones. That's, like, the beauty of this game, you know? That's, like, that's the wonderful stuff. Like, watching Russell work is, you know, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. So let's cut over to Redemption Island. We have an elimination challenge between our boy Cochran and the uneliminatable Ozzy. And the challenge involves grappling hooking three bags and then using a maze that's like...
It's a pulley maze.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Labyrinth?
Labyrinth.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, the Labyrinth game that has now made its way onto, like, iPhones and stuff like that.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there an app for that?
There's precisely an app for that, yes. You know, it's funny, I wrote down, I think this challenge, you know, short of the, like, of the memory challenge that was done last season that I thought was actually really boring, I think this was probably the best challenge for Cochran to have a chance. Despite the presence of the grappling hooking. I mean, he didn't do great with it, but he didn't, like, totally torture him.
I mean, I feel like this one required, you know, some physical touch. Like, you know, and I would never call Cochran coordinated in such a way where he could, like, you know...
Yeah.
But maybe his intelligence would help him link brain navigation with, like, working the pulleys. I'm actually making the pulley motion with my fists right now.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't have video access to me right now.
The only thing, which would be everybody but me.
Hey, man, that's like five other people. That's it. Okay?
That's true. I guess somewhere in the neighborhood of 15% of us have video access to you right now.
Correct.
The thing was, is it's like, you know, it wasn't one of these, like, you know, hold a pose endurance type challenges, which I don't think Cochran would stand any sort of chance in. I mean, we saw what Cochran was like when he was trying to do, you know, Coach Chi on the beach, and, you know, he couldn't stand in the same pose for 8 seconds, let alone 15 minutes.
There's some fine motor control involved in this one where, like, you know, especially at the end, navigating past the tiny gap between the wall and the hole. And you saw at the end, like, he kind of just went for it.
Yeah.
And it was not very finessed. And Ozzy managed to finesse it in and then settle it onto the spot, which was impressive. Given the pressure he was under and, like, his whole $1 million, clearly, like, he actually has a chance to win. Like, that's got to be much more pressure on Ozzy than on Cochran in that shot.
Yeah, well, but I think Cochran played it the way he needed to. Like, I think he was, you know, he recognized he wasn't going to out-finesse his way in to that hole in the center or whatever, and sort of just, you know, he took the risks that he needed to take in order to give himself a legit chance. And it looked like it was really close. I hope that wasn't just editing. It seemed like it was legitimately a close challenge.
Yeah, that would be unfortunate if it was only edited that way. But, you know, when you saw Ozzy exhale at the end, I was convinced. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I would agree. It seemed like Ozzy was legitimately concerned for his game welfare.
Were you moved by Cochran calling this the most meaningful thing that's ever happened?
You know, I mean, like, I love his enthusiasm, and I mean, I can 100% understand exactly where he's coming from. This, you know, come on in, guys. That, you know, I'm one of the guys. Like, that's a great line. It was actually, it was very well put. I mean,
it was.
If as a fellow super fan, you know, if I made it onto the show, like, I definitely would have those moments of, like, wow, I just saw live Jeff Probst snuff a torch and say, like, the tribe has spoken, you know? Like, that's just awesome. But on the flip side, you know, it's still the moments, you know, the tender moments and Probst doing his Dr. Phil impressions are just killing me. It's
awkward.
Yeah.
It certainly is. Yeah.
I mean, him giving, like, this, like, Cochran, you know, a part of you died out here and a new part was born. And, come on. This is not what we're tuning into Survivor for. We're not looking for, like, character rebirth. We're looking for snakes and weasels and rats.
Well, you know, the thing, too, now with this new format is they're looking for redemption stories or whatever. That's why they're bringing people back. You know, that's why they have this island. So, is there a redemption storyline for Cochran here?
Yeah, I guess. I just... it kills me. And, you know, the other thing about Redemption Island that occurred to me in this episode is that I feel like it's the presence of Redemption Island has majorly... And we may have talked about this a bit, but I feel like it's majorly dampened the scramble factor in the game. You know, people who know that they're a sitting duck... Like, normally they're going to scramble and they're going to try to make something happen because otherwise it's over for them. And now they have this little secondary option that it's like, okay, I'll just be content to go to Redemption Island and try to win my way back in that way, you know?
You know, we haven't talked about that, and I think that's a good point that I thought about for the first time right now. Why feel crazy panicked when you know you're still fighting?
Yeah,
if you're on that island.
Exactly. You're not fighting for your life. Thus, you're not going to play like you're fighting for your life. You know, you're going to make a couple of last ditch efforts, but you're not going to go berserk. And in some sense, that's actually smart. I mean, it's not just people, you know, being willing to be resigned to going to Redemption Island. I mean, it's smart because you don't want to alienate anybody, because if you do actually return from Redemption Island, you don't and make it to the final three, you don't want to have burned
people. I don't know if we've seen a lot of that. I think there's just some people who don't try.
Oh, I agree.
The Hail Mary that sometimes works in this game.
No, I mean, overall, yes, I agree that, like, you should be making every effort you can, but
it feels a little like laying up, you know, like, like, you could have tried to hit it over the water, but you laid up, you're like, I'll take the other shot.
Yeah. I gotcha. You know, yeah, I agree. It's funny, I thought that was going to be a basketball analogy, like layup versus dunk, and you went golf instead. It took me a second.
So just to bring this in, I've been trying to mention it, that the season's Top Chef, another elimination reality show. Mm-hmm. They're doing a secret Redemption Island where...
Yeah, Stacey told me about this.
The chef that is eliminated is told only after they're eliminated that you will live to cook again in an arena with one other against one other chef, and whoever survives that, you know, will battle the next eliminated chef, and at some point they're going to come back into the game. And I think that's an interesting factor because the people who are playing, mm-hmm. it doesn't change their desperation to survive.
It's fantastic. I love it.
But the people who are revived at the end, they really appreciate getting another opportunity because a lot of the times you get eliminated, you know, having compromised yourself, and it's a chance to kind of not compromise yourself. I mean, we're talking about completely different games here. We're talking about a game of
right.
creating food versus a game of politics and savvy and
right.
sometimes brute strength.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's parallels there. Let's bring Stacey in. Come on. Come on.
I know. Yeah, we'll have to get her. We'll have to get this this podcast going through. And then we'll get Victor in, and we'll have more people on the podcast than listening. It'll be great. We'll have tipped the scales in our favor. actually, we might not even have anybody. We'll get your boy. Is it Jeff Goldstein? Is that his name?
John.
Yeah, we'll get him. We'll get him in on the podcast, and then we'll have no listeners.
Yeah.
You know, we won't even have to record it. We can just have the conversation. We can roundtable it. And...
Yeah, that's why we do the podcast, Chris, so we don't have to like not have a non-recorded conversation. Let's move on. So, Ozzy wins the right to choose who sees family?
Yeah.
I missed that connection.
Yeah, that was sort of, I mean, it was sort of a weird little thing to do. I mean, it's not surprising, because that's what they did last season. Whoever won that challenge, you know, ended up dictating, you know, who got to see their family and who didn't. Although I think that was made clear at the beginning of the challenge as opposed to afterwards. The thing that I thought was really odd was like, first, Probst says, but let me tell you what you're dealing with before you make any decisions. And I was like, well, duh. Otherwise, he doesn't know what decision he's supposed to even make. Like,
just speculate wildly.
Right? Yes. Just throw out names and we'll decide what to do with them. And then the other thing that was dumb was Probst cut off Ozzy right after he picks Albert first. Ozzy starts to go into a, I'm really sorry, guys, like explaining his pick of Albert or something, or trying to mea culpa his way out of this so people don't hate him. And instead, Probst cuts him off and says, well, before you do that, pick one more person. I was like, Probst, this is the stuff you like, you go to the end of the world for during Tribal Council to like get people to give you this kind of stuff, and you just cut it off when he was trying to serve it up to you. You know, like, I don't know.
No, yeah, no. I think you're right. I think it was a moment missed that
yeah.
they could have had.
Yeah, and I definitely understood his Albert and coach selections because these are players who appear to be in control of the game. I think also he looks at, you know, type of player wise. I think he looks at Albert as his counterpoint on the other tribe. And then, of course, Coach is obviously a kindred spirit, just in that he's the returner or whatever. But I thought the choice of Brandon just seemed very odd to me.
I'm not sure what he owes Brandon.
Yeah. The Stacey said
to me... It's just courting votes, maybe.
Well, exactly. Stacey said to me that she thought, like, it was a good choice because, you know, Brandon seems like the most easily swayed by such a gesture, you know? And that, you know, if...
Does Ozzy know that about him, though?
That's true. I guess, he may or may not be nearly as aware of that. I think by now he probably does, though. I mean, he's had, probably a week or so on the beach together with them.
I don't think so, because when they came in, he was the second one off. It was Keith and then him.
Was it?
Yeah, so he had... Oh, he had 6 days.
No, so. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, nearly
okay.
a week.
That's fair.
So, yeah, like, you know, he's the person that you... You know, everybody worries about, you know, carrying favor or that sort of thing when you make those decisions. And ultimately, I think that's a load of BS. I don't think people make decisions based off of who let me see my family member for, you know, 24 hours or whatever. But Brandon seems most eligible to be swayed by such actions, so... I sort of understand that.
Yeah. So, you know, Hans's dad comes in, starts picking Brandon's brain about what he's up to, and Brandon's so positive, so excited. He's like, Dad, I'm going to do it the Lord's way. It's going to be great.
No.
And his dad's like, are you crazy?
Yeah. I love it. He even says that's not the Hans way. Like, this is, as Coach said, they're all cut from the same cloth. And, you know, in some sense, I have to give it to Brandon. You know, as much as a nut he seems like, and as much of a confused teenager he appears to be, I got to give him credit for at least seeming to have the courage of his convictions. You know, like, he's talking to his dad. He's like, no, Dad. He's like, his dad starts to say, like, you know, if you have a chance to make a move that'll put you in the final three, and he just cuts his dad off. He's like, no, it doesn't matter. I'm doing it my way. And so there's a degree to which I respect that. Like, as much as he's crazy and you just don't know what's going to come out of his mouth, and you're convinced that he's just completely out of his element trying to worry about strategy. Like, you know, he says, you know, I'm playing the game very transparently, and like, it's, he is, like, he's definitely the least two-faced of any of the people out there. You know, in some sense,
he's so not two-faced that he presents the face to everyone at Tribal and says, here's the voting order.
Exactly, that's what I mean.
Gets himself in hot water over it.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, people get a little bit bent out of shape about stuff like that. And certainly there's a degree of tact that he's lacking, you know, when he basically calls out Edna at the immunity challenge and says, you know, yeah, she's next to go. I want to make sure she didn't win, when it was, you know, as Rick pointed out, that's like, you know, calling the dog over and then kicking it as he gets there. I think he's playing a pretty honest game, and he's not going to have a lot to apologize for when he gets to the jury, you know, if he makes it to the final three and gets to the jury.
I'm sorry, Chris, I couldn't hear anything you said. I'm amazed by this HTC Evo phone.
Oh, is that what you're doing? Right, I was wondering. I was like, I'm carrying the podcast.
You know,
now.
I'm holding this Sprint HTC Evo 4G phone. Yeah. It's not the 3D phone, but
it's a flat screen, though.
Look at this amazing picture that I've got on this phone, Chris. It's stunning. It's amazing.
Did you catch that Coach referred to it as a flat screen phone? Like, are there a lot of phones out there that are using like the old cathode ray tubes?
Maybe he thought that like a 3D image would appear on like a bubbled surface on the phone. I don't know.
Oh God, the slurping of the Sprint phone is. I guess at this point, as much as I hate it, it's a time-honored tradition now in the show. You know,
I don't even see it anymore.
Exactly,
it's sort of the
new Fallen Comrades montage. You know.
Maybe we'll get it this year.
Yeah, that's what you know. What maybe instead. During the finale, we can have, like, the Fallen Cell Phones montage, and they can just play clips of, like, past seasons, like, you know, the phone that they used, like, 7 years ago that now anybody would be laughed at for taking out of their pocket, but seemed, like, super cool then, and, you know, a few clips of, like, I don't know who, say, Colby or whoever, just being like, oh, I love this Sprint phone, it's so great. By the way, watch me on Top Shot.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Is that the name of it?
Top
Shot?
Yes. Yeah. It's now called History Channel's Top Shot. Like, you gotta be careful.
Oh, okay.
It's a whole thing.
Not to be confused with TLC's Top Shot.
No, but just not to be confused with Top Shot. So that's like a whole thing.
I see.
History's Top Shot.
Right. Not to be confused with, say, PBS's Top Shot.
Yeah. On to the immunity challenge.
Sure.
Okay, so I loved it. It was hexes and a board game. So
yeah,
this is totally up my alley. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a board game nut, and and not like Candyland or Monopoly. It's like you know, Settlers of Catan,
exactly,
you know, yeah, that kind of stuff. Like,
and by exactly,
I
mean games nobody's ever heard of.
Hey, people have played Settlers of Catan. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Thanks.
It's a small segment of the population. Although who knows, that may overlap well with our niche.
Yeah, Carcassonne, Dominion, that's the kinds of games. And I'd love to hear from you guys if you're board game players.
I don't even know where one game title ended and the next game title began there. Like...
Don't worry about it. This game reminded me of a game called Blockus, B-L-O-K-U-S.
Oh, I think I actually do know that one.
Yeah, Blockus is pretty straightforward. You have, like, different colored shapes, and you have a board, and you have to, like, place your pieces a certain way, and you're trying to make it so you can get all your pieces on, and the best way to do it is to do it the way the contestants did it, which is to kind of head for the middle and carve out a path to kind of cut off a chunk of the board for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's the best strategy in that case, and I was happy to see that most of them attempted it at least, and you could tell that the very moment when Coach fulfilled what he was attempting to do, that he knew he had the game.
Yeah, and he gave his little Dragon Slayer pose.
And unfortunately, it drained the tension and drama out of the challenge. But
There's two things that I don't get about the challenge. I mean, don't get me wrong. I saw the challenge and I love it. The one flaw in the challenge, I think, is that it's gang upable, and usually, as far as I can remember, they've done a very good job of making sure that immunity challenges are not gang upable. Like, reward challenges, they've always allowed to be gang upable, where it's like you're throwing rocks to break other people's tiles, and when their tiles are gone, they're out. So everybody can target one person to make sure they don't get the reward.
Make sure they don't get the reward.
But
right.
But immunity, it was supposed to be always everybody's fair shot, and this was clearly not the case. I mean,
like, you win it on your own merits, not your opponent's shutting you down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And this does not appear to have that that quality. The other thing I didn't get is, why was the board tiered? Like, it doesn't add anything to the board to make it have these steps.
It only made it harder to see from certain angles.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it does make it look slightly more majestic in some sense or whatever, but
yeah, it's just a platform with hexes on it.
Yeah. What was the other thing I wanted to I guess it was just...
Brandon calling out Edna.
Oh, yeah, there was Brandon calling out Edna. The other thing I didn't get was, how does him making a move towards Albert...
help him eliminate...
Help Edna. Prevent Edna from winning?
I don't remember the region on the board, but...
I think that moves Brandon away from Edna.
Yeah.
Because Edna was on his left and Albert was on his right. It just did not make any sense, but whatever.
Whether he did it right, his intentions were squeeze out Edna.
Right, and he was transparent about his intentions.
Yeah.
Once again, the strategy proves to be too difficult for Brandon.
Yeah. So, you know, we cut back to camp, and, like, all the attention on Edna was, I don't know about you, it was bad for me. Like, I can't, her voice is grating, and maybe it was just the bad Thai food talking, but I couldn't sustain it. Like, I was like, God, I was just sitting there trying to blog it. I was like, stop talking. Like, you haven't cared for 30 days whether or not you're going or staying, and now all of a sudden, like, you're trying to make this argument of why you should stay, and it was just tired. I couldn't handle it. And, you know, she pronounced it guillotine.
Yeah, I know, that's Chris. True. I picked up on that as well.
Guillotine.
Yeah.
Well, I can't.
She's an anesthesiologist, not a French philosophy major or something.
We should celebrate Bastille Day.
Well, they do. They do pronounce it Bastille. They pronounce the L's in Bastille.
I was coming up with the wrong word. I'm sorry.
Guillaume. I don't know. How about that?
Guillaume.
Yeah, Guillaume.
It's good, thank you. You salvaged me. I guess the only part that caught my ear was when Edna said that she would eat Coach's crap.
Was it? Yeah, did she say stool? Was that what she said?
It was stool.
Why did they have to bleep stool?
Because I don't think CBS wants people talking about scatological goings on.
What? No. What's that? What was that word you just used?
Scatological.
What? I don't even know what that means.
Look it up.
All right.
We have a sophisticated audience.
All right.
John Goldstein in particular.
We've got an audience that's got homework assignments now.
Johnny has pictures of him with Ron Jeremy, so I'm assuming he's familiar with all these goings on.
So. Okay. Well, we're really personalizing our podcast now.
He said he would listen, so I'm going to go ahead and.
All right.
I'm going to go ahead and let.
Big ups to JG.
No, so the thing aside, you know, stool eating aside, I was caught by Coach's plan for her to simply, and it was very godfathering. It was like, he's like, tell Albert and Sophie, I'll talk to Coach and everything's cool. And it was like, this is what's going to happen. And
that's
everything,
a, that's
like,
a good Marlon Brando, like, I like it.
He's going to wave his hand and like, it's all going to be taken care of.
Yeah, it was very weird.
I'm going to make him an offer. He can't refuse.
What is, I didn't even know what that meant. Like, tell them everything's cool? What does that mean?
It's a mind game. I like it. See, that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
That's
like, they both like just kind of like, sat there and stared at each other afterwards. Like, does she know what it means? And she's like, what the hell does that mean?
I wish she had done it, because she didn't.
Yeah, that would have been great.
She went and like, said that like Coach promised that he's in, which is not what he said. But just to say, just so you know, I talked to Coach and everything's cool. And just leave it hanging. Just like... let it stay and see
what
happens.
That's true. I suppose that might have created actual waves. Who knows?
I know. Just because, like, what do we do? What does it mean? I don't know. Like, you just drop that, like, right before you go to tribal.
Right.
Just drop it.
Yeah, exactly.
Just drop that.
As you're walking in, like, you get close
like
to
Like, you're holding the torches. You're holding the torches. You're, like, about to film them walking in and be like, guys, I talked to Coach. It's all good.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Probst says, okay, it's time to vote. Rick, you're up. And you turn to Albert. Hey, Coach says everything's cool.
The plan is go. Yeah. Like,
that'd be a great seed. That'd be a great seed to drop.
Yeah. So yeah. You know, tribal council, I don't know, just, you know, speeches about honor and loyal and whatever. It's a party line, and I don't take much stock in it. I don't know that.
Well, see, nobody knows the password. The password is, my word is a Christian man. You know, that's the next level of honor and integrity is my word is a Christian man. And nobody seems to know that that's like, that's the catchword. That's the password.
Honor is a Christian man.
My honor is a Christian man. Now you know. Now you know, like, ooh, I'm in the club. You know? Stacy made an interesting point to me about Coach's honor and integrity. And, I mean, I understand that ultimately it has all – you have to make decisions made within the confines of what's happening in the game and, you know, relative to other players. But she pointed out, you know, so Edna gets voted out. He gives her the hug, which is like – it actually felt very godfathery. You know, it was very similar to last season with Boston Rob, and it's like, not only is he voting him out, but he's got him, like, thanking him for voting them out, you know? Like, he gets a hug from Edna. Like, if I were Edna, I would have just pushed him over his stool right there and, like, let him...
You know. It was Stacy who was, like, just, like, tell them to go screw themselves
for
the hug.
Stacy the contestant.
Stacy the contestant who we have not talked about in a month.
Right,
I know.
Yes. But yes, the other Stacy, my fiancé, was saying, you know, the interesting thing is that Edna was the one at the very beginning of the season when Coach was getting, like, no openings from the tribe at the very beginning when they were to be paired with the tribes. Like, everybody else kind of just scoffed at him after he lost that opening challenge to Ozzy, and it was Edna who actually came over to him, and he was all, like, all about Edna. And then, you know, when the chips began to fall, you know, he cut her loose.
You know, Edna had this one line in there about how, like, just by randomness, she wasn't on a beach on one of the first nights in the game, and, like, that's, like, having an effect, you know, a month down the line. And
yeah.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, she's right. I mean, it was, you know, by pure, you know, if she had happened to be there, it's a six-person alliance with three ancillaries as opposed to a five-person alliance with four ancillaries. You know, she's definitely right. It's, you know, there's a decent amount of luck that plays into the game there.
Yeah.
You know, I guess the lesson to be learned there is whenever, like, seemingly innocuous social things start occurring, just make sure you're in the group that is the bigger group, right?
Yeah, and I mean, my gosh, whenever you do end up getting cast, Chris, I hope you figure out how to get that done. But you just have your antenna up the entire time.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be so exhausting. Like, you know, I have to be honest. It occurred to me recently that we don't give these players enough credit. I mean, some of them deserve to be, you know, given a hard time for how badly they play or how silent they are. I mean, heck, you know, I think Rick's wife has said more things on the show than Rick has. But, you know, the overall, just, you know, how taxing it must be to try to have your antenna up at all times has just got to be mentally exhausting. And then, of course, you don't even sleep well to be able to actually wake up refreshed the next day to then have your antenna up for another 15 hours.
Well, that's what they, like, people who would go to Exile Island be like, you know, this is good, because they just, mm-hmm. you know, the antenna goes down, you're not wondering who's talking about you and where.
Yeah, you can just sit there and think about game planning instead of having to think about game planning, and then in the meantime, like, with your peripheral vision being like, wait a minute, those two people are talking, are they talking about me?
Yeah. Or being judged for whatever you're doing. Like, you know, you could sit in the hammock and, like, think you're okay, but, like, someone's like, so with you sit in the hammock being like, man, all he does is sit in that hammock, and
right.
you had no idea that you were offending anyone just by sitting in a hammock.
That's true. No, I definitely agree.
You know, this season reminds me, and I put a note in here that, like, and I'm shoehorning this in just because I thought it was a good analogy. You know those, like, scenes in a movie where, like, it's a martial arts film, and there's, like, a gang of, like, eight guys who are, like, trying to take on, like, the one hero, and instead of all attacking simultaneously and overwhelming him with force, what do?
Oh, yeah, they one by one. They, like,
they one by one,
the circle around them, and then one person steps in at a time.
And I feel like that's what's going on with, like, these old survivors. It's like they're not working together to try to eliminate the threat that is the former contestant. And there's just, like, one by one, once they're on the chopping block, they go in, they try to make some case as to why they shouldn't go, and they're getting
oh,
stuck.
Yeah. You mean, like, Edna, like, and Cochran getting together?
Yeah, I mean, Edna and Cochran, they should have made something happen. You know, like, there's just no... You know, there's no swing, like, there's no ganging up of any kind against the dominant force. We've seen it the last two seasons, and mm-hmm. it's just unfortunate. No one's willing to attack simultaneously instead of just, you know, taking their turn getting shot.
Well, I think part of it might be, although I guess Cochran is a pretty savvy player, but, like, I think part of it might be that the savvy players get themselves to the inside of the alliances, and so it's, you know, you have the unsavvy players who are the ones who are on the outside, and it takes... they don't realize they're on the outside until it's too late, you know? Like, because Edna could have made a move with Cochran, you know, two or three episodes ago, flipped back over to go with, like, I don't know, Jim, Dawn, and what was her name? Whitney. But, you know, that would require Edna to have recognized that she was on the outside of that group, and at the time she was still just drinking the Kool-Aid. And, you know, she never struck me as a savvy player, you know? She just struck me as, you know, that yipping dog that, you know, runs around camp trying to make everybody like her, which is not really savvy and, in fact, actually just grates on people.
Yes. My God.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm trying on a new catchphrase. Let's, you know, we got some...
Podcast out?
We got some flack from... Put a bow on it. So
yeah, we did.
I'm gonna try this one here. You ready for Chris? You ready for it?
All right.
Let's snuff the torch on this episode.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right. There we go. Let's snuff the torch on it.
Let's snuff the mic.
The tribe has spoken.
The tribe has spoken. No. The host has spoken. I don't know. How about podcast out? No,
you like the Seacrest.
Is it too derivative?
Yeah, but if we're not gonna put a bow on, at least we can snuff a torch on it. Let's burn the buff on this.
Oh, we're not burning any buffs, man. We're against the buff burning, so we can't do burn the buff on it or whatever.
Let's do the green screen on this.
Should we throw our mics in the fire?
Yeah,
I don't know. We've speculated enough on it. I don't know. You pick one and call it.
I still want to try that. Yeah, let's snuff the torch on this one, Chris.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Oh, no. Hey, no.
Oh.
Dude, we have an online presence, man.
What? Oh, right. Oh, so I see. That's my cue to do the online
presence. That's your cue to do your online presence.
I'm totally thrown off. I'm waiting for the bow line, and that's...
I know it's Sunday and everything, but...
Right, yeah. Definitely throw, you know, this is the longest I've gone. No, it's not. Just kidding. We had that 2-week break when they did the recap. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, yes, they can find us online. The Twitter handle is tribalpodcast, and our email address is podcast@tc.vanbee.net.
On behalf of fellow host Chris, upgraded title, I am your host, Ralph, and we'll see you in a few days for episode 13.